Hello, you are listening to WXRWLP Milwaukee, 104.1 FM and RiverWestRadio.com globally. Archived shows available at creamcitymedia.com/anti. Hello once again, friends, and thank you for tuning in to The Anti. I'm your host, NTSC, and let's talk a little bit about what this show is. It is a weekly primer on freedom. The Anti is anti-authoritarian, anti-capitalist, anti-hierarchy, anti-sexist, anti-racist, anti-fascist, and more. If we're against so much, what on earth do we stand for? The ideals of freedom. In this series, we explore what a free society might look like while recognizing that none of us today are truly free. As ever, WXRW River West Radio needs your help. Let's talk a little bit about River West Radio. River West Radio is more than just a hodgepodge of oddballs talking about what's important to them. It is your neighbors. By and large, probably people that you know, if you live anywhere near the River West neighborhood, because the saying goes, it's a small world after all. Well, if it's a small world, Milwaukee is tiny. Milwaukee is maybe the smallest, relatively big city in the continental United States. You ever do that thing where you walk down the street and you see about 27 people that you know, and you can't get where you're going because you need to catch up with all of them? That's Milwaukee in a nutshell, and absolutely that's River West. The people producing content on River West are all people with whom you live and work. They're your neighbors, they're your friends. Maybe they're not all people that you like, but they're people that have a voice, and they're people that are using this incredible resource to get the word out about things they're interested in, things they're working on, things that everyone else is working on in the area. Really good stuff that's going on in Southeast Wisconsin and Milwaukee and River West in particular. The odds are good, if you are listening to River West Radio, that you live and work in the community. And because there are so many creative and entrepreneurial people that live in River West, and as much as I detest the word entrepreneurial, the odds are good you have some resources which you could donate to WXRWLP Milwaukee. If you are a business owner, if you work at a business, you really ought to get in touch with your managers or your bosses, or you need to consider becoming an official underwriter of River West Radio, especially if you own a business within 5 miles of River West Radio, because that's our direct broadcast distance. If you're in that radius, then you absolutely need to become an underwriter, and as quickly as possible. Becoming an underwriter with River West Radio, which is a 501c3 nonprofit, so your generous tax-deductible underwritership, your sponsorship essentially, will go a long way. We are an extremely small staff. We run a very lean machine. Essentially, it's made up entirely of volunteers. So your donation goes a really long way to helping the station stay up. It goes a long way to helping producers get the content out there that they are producing. And then beyond that, if you have a show idea, if you have a voice and you feel there are topics which need further light here on River West Radio, get in touch with us. Come on down to 824 East Center Street. While you're here, purchase some gear and speak with Martin or Zav, and get involved. Become a producer, become a steward of the station, and absolutely become an underwriter. And if you do get your own show on the station, then it is incumbent upon you to seek underwriting, because anything you can do for the station is going to help everybody involved, and it's going to help create an even more vibrant and healthy community in River West, of which all of us are so fond. So somewhat recently, my wife and I had a lovely time having dinner at the home of two fellow Wobblies, two fellow members of the Industrial Workers of the World. And it was really, really great. And I hadn't gotten really an opportunity to speak just personally with these two fellow union members. And the general question always gets asked, how did you find yourself joining the Industrial Workers of the World? How did you come to this political ethic? How did you find yourself engaged in this work? When that question is posed of me, how did you come to this? I always need to talk about my favorite book and my favorite author, Ursula K. Le Guin. In 2007, and I've talked about this previously on this program, in 2007, I read Ursula K. Le Guin's novel, The Dispossessed. I have always been a big fan of science fiction in general, and Ursula K. Le Guin is my favorite science fiction author, and also just my favorite author of all time. But that book, the reading of that book, changed my life forever. It was a watershed moment for me. It redefined everything about my morality. It redefined everything about my personal ethos. And it's been a very important book to my evolution as a functioning, autonomous human being, you know, who lives in a community of other autonomous human beings. That's a weird phrase. But today's episode is going to be about that shift for me. It's going to be about the course of action that I and many others have chosen, both contemporarily and historically. And it's going to be about one of the answers to the big question that any radical leftist inevitably gets posed by people with whom they are talking. About life, about politics, about society, about capitalism. There's always the one big question that I have addressed many times on this show and will address again today in further detail. And that question is, before we pose that question, let's put ourselves into a realistic situation where somebody might pose this question. Maybe you find yourself at a family gathering. Maybe you find yourself at a party of friends or acquaintances or friends of friends, and you're talking, and because you don't necessarily want to hide your politics, because leaving your politics at the door is not going to help anybody, and it's especially not going to help shift the Overton window further to the left, which I think is so crucial nowadays. But, you know, you're not necessarily going to lead with your politics. You still want to be somewhat polite. And so the first thing out of your mouth isn't going to say dismantle capitalism, fire to the prisons. Right? Although maybe I should just start leading with that, so people have a better sense of the person that they're talking with. And maybe that'll help me shift the window even faster. Because the more we can talk about these things and the more normalized it becomes, the better off we'll all be. But so you find yourself in casual, polite conversation, and inevitably, you know, somebody says something. Maybe they mention prisons, or maybe they mention healthcare, or maybe they mention education, or maybe they mention the crumbling infrastructure, or maybe they mention climate change. Really, any of the slew of things which are all inherently political, whether people want them to be or not. And you find an opportunity to say, oh, hey, you know, the prison industrial complex could be abolished. The police could be abolished. There is a simple solution to climate change, and that is the dismantling of capitalism. Blah, blah, blah. Any number of the simple phrases that you can choose to address these things. And you see their eyes go wide, and you see their eyebrow raise, and they go, what? what are you, some kind of socialist? And you go, yes, absolutely, I'm a socialist. And furthermore, I'm a communist. And furthermore, I'm an anarchist. And they go, oh, you know, they make some kind of dismissive plosive out of their face. And they go, well, okay, so communism absolutely doesn't work. And that's obviously been proved by history. And you go, oh, well, that wasn't communism. That was state capitalism. And if they believe that, which most people won't because they don't understand what communism actually is and that there has never actually been a communist nation in the history of the entire world. If they at least want to start the conversation or continue the conversation, they will inevitably go, well, all right, buddy. Okay, socialist. Okay, communist. So what's better than capitalism? What are you going to do if you end up dismantling capitalism? What does this proposed society look like, right? It's the big question. Well, if you don't like it so much, what's better? Which is a fair question. It's absolutely a fair question. The propaganda that we've all been raised in continuously touts out the same BS platitudes that are completely false. They're lies. One of them is that capitalism raises people out of poverty. That comes in direct comparison to slavery. So, yes, when you compare the system of capitalism to the system of chattel slavery and human ownership, then yes, it does actually raise people out of poverty because human beings can no longer be property of other human beings. To say nothing of the fact that, of course, now you just have to rent yourself out instead of letting people actually buy you wholesale. You know, they'll always tout out the same things, but inevitably they'll say, well, what's going to be better then? What's your big plan? What's your big idea? Well, let's talk a little bit about that big idea. That's what this episode is going to be about. This week's episode is going to be titled Syndicalism. Syndicalism is a term that we've probably briefly discussed on this program, but we haven't gone into any real detail about it. And I think that it's really important to go into detail about it. Whenever people try and narrow down what I consider myself to be, there's a list of things, depending on the day, depending on what I've read most recently, and depending on how I feel. And all of these things share in common the fact that they are socialist, right? By their very nature, they are inherently socialist. Socialist because the workers own the means of production. That is their relationship to the means of production. In direct contrast to capitalism, where the capitalist class owns the means of production. That is the difference primarily between socialism and capitalism, which is one of the reasons there has never been a truly socialist nation, and those experiments which did pop up were inevitably crushed by the force of capitalist nations. We'll get into that probably in a later episode, the whole brutal history of anarchist and socialist institutions that that were working very well, among them Rojava, and are now being crushed or were crushed by capitalist, imperialist, colonialist interests. So let's talk about syndicalism. It's one of the things that I have considered myself over the years. I've considered myself an anarcho-communist. I've considered myself an anarcho-syndicalist. I've considered myself a libertarian socialist. I've considered myself just a straight-up communist, you know, pure and simple. I've considered myself a democratic confederalist. In the last episode, we talked a little bit about what that means. But syndicalism was the first socialist tradition that I came to, and that is directly because of Ursula K. Le Guin's amazing science fiction novel, The Dispossessed, which I highly recommend everybody read. It's available from your local library. Syndicalism, very simply put, and I won't read, you know, a definition, but essentially, it is a socialist system by which the workers own the means of production and they operate and organize the means of production through unions. or syndics, if you want to call them, or syndicals, which I've also seen them referred to as. But syndicalism simply means organization by rank and file, directly democratic means. Do not confuse syndicalism with business unionism. Business unionism is another way to divide the working class. You'll know by now that I'm a wobbly, that I'm a member of the industrial workers of the world. I should make this known officially. The industrial workers of the world are not a syndicalist union. They are not an anarcho-syndicalist union. There is no purity test to join the industrial workers of the world. You do not need to be an anarchist. You do not need to be a communist. You do not need to ascribe to any specific politic, and in particular, as codified in the bylaws, the industrial workers of the world are apolitical. They do not align with, nor do they specifically align against, any body politic. Anybody is allowed into the industrial workers of the world so long as you are not a boss, so long as you do not have higher firepower, so long as you are not a cop, so long as you are not a member of any of the policing class. So you can't be a law enforcement officer, neither can you be a corrections officer. You cannot be a paid member of a business union or trade union. You cannot be a politician. I'm pretty sure that's it. The industrial workers of the world is not an anarcho-syndicalist union. Having said that, because of its bylaws and because of its constitution, it is very attractive to people who believe in syndicalism. It is very attractive to people who believe in anarcho-syndicalism. It is very attractive to communists. It is generally attractive to socialists because of its methodology. That really is what makes a syndicalist a syndicalist, is the methodology by which we will achieve our goals. The goals of common ownership of the means of production and their organization through the use of unions. Okay, so what does that really mean? What does that really look like? Well, the methodology of syndicalism is essentially identical to the methodology of the industrial workers of the world. For example, we do not appeal to authority. Instead, we seek to take authority by direct action. Direct action being the strike, work slowages, work stoppages, sick outs, things like that. Because our primary power is understood to be condensed into our place of work. Our labor is our power. So the history of syndicalism begins primarily in the early 20th century, the very early 20th century. And it would historically be crushed by capitalist governments in the lead up to World War I, although it would gain some prominence again around World War II. Now, there have been groups that organized themselves in syndicalism. And as I said before, they were destroyed eventually and are in the process of being destroyed by capitalist imperialists. Maybe the most famous anarcho-syndicalist revolution took place in the Spanish Civil War. The FAICNT, I think also sometimes just referred to as the CNT. I might be totally wrong. I'm not actually looking this up, but I'm just doing this out of memory. Was a splinter faction that wanted to run their communities through syndicalism. They were, of course, eventually crushed. Although there are still memories of the anarchist groups in the area, and there's still quite a lot of anarchist action in the region. So the syndicalist unions of the Spanish Civil War, the CNT, and I think the FAI, I can't remember. I should really have done more research, exist in a list of syndicalist unions, many of which are still actually current and operating today. So, of course, there's the industrial workers of the world who are not officially a syndicalist union, but whose methodology essentially aligns with the tenets of syndicalism. There is the Free Workers Union, or the FAU, which is German. What does it stand for? The Freie Arbeiter Union, I think, something like that. The Free Workers Union. I think they are very openly an anarcho-syndicalist union. I think that they have no qualms making that distinction. There are others that are escaping my memory right now. That's not super important. What's important is back to our question that we've been posed at this theoretical party, right? What do you want the world to look like? How would you prefer it be organized? Well, okay, let's look at it through a syndicalist lens, shall we? So first and foremost, syndicalism stands in direct opposition to capitalism. It must. There is no such thing as capitalist syndicalism. That would be ridiculous. And again, because we know that the owning class and the working class have nothing in common, that their goals are diametrically opposed. Workers want to have a good life where they don't have to work that much. Within the lens of this current system, obviously, workers want high wages. They want good protections. They want good health care. And employers want the opposite. They want low wages. They want to not be responsible for health care or for the safety of their workers. They want as little regulation as possible. The goals and the means of these two forces are diametrically opposed, and there can be no peace between them so long as the few owners have all the good things in life and the workers are essentially crushed under their heel, to paraphrase. So syndicalism stands in direct opposition to capitalism. So the very first thing we would need to do in a syndicalist organization of any kind of society would be to dismantle capitalism. That's not as difficult as you actually may think. I like to go back to the example that I use pretty frequently of Greece, the company called Vio.me. The workers there who were owed back pay because the capitalist owner of the company just abandoned it because it was no longer profitable and stopped paying their employees, it began as a strike. What began as a strike on the part of the workers then transitioned into an occupation of the factory. They were occupying it. They just wanted their back pay, their back wages. When it became evident that that was not going to happen, the occupation, the originally intended temporary occupation of the factory, became a permanent occupation of the factory, and they seized the means of production. And applause to them. Now there is an update on this. So they seized the means of production. The company, when it was originally owned by the capitalists, was highly pollutant, and it made really terrible, toxic, awful industrial chemicals. So when the workers took over the factory and occupied it permanently and seized the means of the production of that factory, they, living in the area, did not want to make a horribly pollutant, terribly toxic chemical anymore. They did not want to harm the communities in which they lived, and they no longer wanted to harm the environment. So they transitioned the use of that factory to create green cleaning soaps, which are environmentally friendly. So beyond that, there's even further updates. Now they are starting to offer community health services and other free services to their local community. They have created a worker-owned and held in common means of production, and now they're starting to spread the quote-unquote wealth of what they are producing to the community at large. So the seizure of the means of production is one way essentially to necessarily dismantle capitalism. Anywhere you work, you outnumber your bosses, and you simply would need to decide that, all right, guess what? This is ours now. and we are going to reappropriate this store or this factory or this call center or whatever it is, we are going to reappropriate it to our own ends. And we are going to decide what we do, why we do it, how we do it, and what we do with the product of our labor. That's what syndicalism is. And we're going to do it democratically. We're all going to decide together through proposals and votes and committees how we are going to organize our own work. Now, of course, what you're saying to yourself potentially is you cannot seize the means of production. And why can't you? Well, simply because you are under threat of violence at all times by the state. Because the state is nothing more than a bully arm of the capitalist class. And that becomes never more evident than when anybody would attempt to rise up and seize the means of production. If you work at a grocery store and you've decided that it's not fair that people can't eat and that you're throwing out fully a third of all of the food that you have there, and you might like to repurpose that to feed the homeless or to feed the poor or to feed yourself or to feed anybody who needs it and can't afford it. And if you decided that you wanted to take over that grocery store and maintain it yourselves, because you obviously don't need managers, that's ridiculous. You can all work there and you could all operate it quite handsomely without the need of bosses and managers and, you know, middle managers and all of the parasites that are constantly micromanaging your life. You could work together to get things done as you needed them to get done. Except who would step in and stop you? The police. Because again, the police are the direct arm of capitalism. They're the violent force which can stop you from doing so. Which is another one of the reasons capitalism needs to be abolished before syndicalism or socialism could ever be realized. Because capitalism is an inherently violent force. It is a violent, coercive, and exploitative force that continuously threatens you with violence of all kinds to keep you in line. And to keep you functioning as a cog in this machine, which serves capital. So, you could take that model of a single workplace, which is organized democratically by people who actually work there, and you could extend that to literally all institutions and industries. And if you're in the IWW, those industries would work together to support one another. That's what industrial democracy is, when everybody commonly owns and operates the means of production to the betterment of the human family and the planet as a whole. Only through these kind of socialist situations, only through these kinds of socialist institutions are we ever going to save the planet. Are we going to emancipate humanity? Are we going to actually give back the control of our lives, which we should have had from the very beginning? So what might an entirely syndicalist organized society look like? Well, once we have the means of production, we can decide how we use them. We can decide what jobs need to get done, and we can actually organize in such a way that the work necessary to complete those jobs is not excessive. We could give ourselves as much free time as we possibly can, and we could liberate the creative spirit of humanity to actually serve everyone's needs. I didn't even realize this topic was going to be so big. We might have to go into it further next week, but we're running out of time here. Thank you so much for listening to The Anti here on WXRW River West Radio. I've been NTSC. I'll be back again next week to discuss our amazing potential and freedom. There's more great programming coming up, but first let's hear from Sandy and see what's going on this week in River West.